Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, and for our German listeners, guten Tag. Welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show. We often say that investing can be a zoo, but do you know which animals you should be watching to improve your returns? That's our topic today. And this question sets the tone for today's show. And sure enough, you know I'll be asking you to call in and give us your answer. But before I do that, let me share a quote relevant to this topic and the author relevant to the topic as well. People are driven by peer pressure, envy, greed, and panic to find a shortcut. Let me try that again. My head's a little rustling there. People are driven by peer pressure, envy, greed, and panic to find a shortcut. And that's by Robert Menschel. We'll talk more about Robert Menschel a little later in the show. Today is Monday, March 12, 2012. It's 8:01 in Arizona. For many listeners in the U.S., you think we changed the time zone today. No, we didn't. But many of you changed, many of you in the U.S. at least, changed your clocks over the weekend, and that's why it seems later. And just in time for our next show, Europeans will change their clocks just to keep the confusion going. So anyway, we will try to keep you posted on that, but it is a good idea to get on and double-check what our start time is because we don't change our clocks. All right, and I am having internet problems, so I don't still see the chat window and all of that, but I am going to have that working hopefully very shortly. I was trying to figure out why my internet is doing the crazy things that it is. Anyway, where was I here? I am sure glad, by the way, besides the fact that we don't change time in Arizona, I'm kind of glad I live here this time of year. Now, you may recall, in the last month, I'm finally moving back to my office after 6 moves over 8 months, working out of temporary locations, all triggered by a fire that started in June of 2012. Seems like an awfully long time. Well, even though I'm back and my new furniture arrived and I can start finding out what books, files, equipment survived the fire, I still don't have any heat in my office. That's dealing with insurance companies. But living in Phoenix, Arizona, this is an inconvenience, not necessarily a hardship. Could you imagine living in Minnesota and the heat in your office is not working? So anyway, it's not nearly as bad as it sounds. But my voice is still a little bit raspy, or it is again. A couple weeks ago I had a cold, and it seems to be coming back again. And it could have something to do with the heat in my office. Now, in January, on this very radio show, January 2012, of course, you heard that the equity markets are likely to do well in the early part of 2012. And so far this year, we're correct. I will not give you an update to the equity markets for a little while longer until things get moving here on my computer. But they are starting to move along. I just have no idea what happened to my browser just before the show started. You're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. And look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. Now, if you missed the shows in January, or any others, you can find them on our archives. The archives of past shows are available on www.wealthdna.us. Okay, so wealthdna.us. Okay, now, before we dig deeper into this topic, I'd love to hear your answers. Your answers to which animals should you be watching to improve your returns. And from what I can see, the chat window's up. I can't quite see it yet, but it is getting there. So hopefully you can respond either through the chat window or give us a call. And the phone number to call in is 917-388-4162. And you'll just be asked to hit a 1 to talk to the host and our not publisher. Well, that's close. That's true also, but our producer of the show would then get you on at an appropriate time. But that's the question today. Which animals should you be watching to improve your returns? And again, chat window below, and it looks like it's starting to come through finally. The internet is slowly catching up with itself here. It must be that it's a little colder than usual in the morning, and the internet is still frozen. At 60 degrees, it's hard to freeze, but who knows. Let's get started on the zoo that we call the financial markets. That's today's topic. Let's go back to the 1980s. So we're talking almost 30 years ago. Burton Malkiel, he was a Princeton economist, I don't know what he's up to these days, but he may still be there, published a book by the name of Random Walk Down Wall Street. Very popular book at that time. Now, he had an interesting claim in that book. In that book, he claimed that a blindfolded monkey could have just as good as investment returns as professional money managers. So why have a fund manager and why pay him to do his job as you could just as well throw darts at a stock listing? Anyway, that's what the claim was in the book, that the investment managers will be wrong as often as they are right, and so why bother having an investment manager? And that's part of his rationale. He said the ups and downs in the equity markets are so purely random, there is no way to outperform the averages by being a smarter investor. So he would say, listening to this show will do you no good, I guess is what he was saying. Now, he didn't say that. But his hypothesis, his recommendation, I guess, at the end of the book, is that you might as well buy an index of stocks as the most practical way to outperform the professionals. Now, I don't subscribe to that theory. And way back then, there were a lot of skeptics. So in 1988, the Wall Street Journal thought they might be able to sell a few more copies of the Wall Street Journal if they did a column testing Malkiel's hypothesis. So if you recall that time period, you read the Wall Street Journal, which I did on a regular basis back then, I don't always know. Every week, they had some Wall Street professionals pick their favorite stocks for the next 6 months and the next 12 months. And a journalist posing as the blindfolded monkey threw darts at the stock listings in the paper. Now, I assume he used the Wall Street Journal on the wall, and I sure hope it wasn't a wood-paneled wall. The column then published, the same column would publish what happened 6 months a year, what was recommended 6 months ago or a year ago by those panelists. And by those, if you will, panelists, which are experts in the blindfolded monkey. So anyway, you would now have a feel for, hey, 6 months ago, the monkey said buy Xerox, and the fund managers are saying buy Kodak. And if you know your history, neither of those stocks have done very well over the last 30 years. But nonetheless, they would show how those stocks performed over that 6 month or 12 month period. Frankly, looking back at the results, and I used to read this for good fun, you know, the blindfolded monkey sounded like an interesting concept, you know, the dartboard. But there was no clear winner. Some weeks the professionals outperformed, other times they underperformed. So this was a rather humorous way, a kind of Friday afternoon, as I recall, is when it was published, or Friday's edition, so it gave you a chance to read it Friday afternoon over the weekend to see how the monkey was doing compared to the professionals. But no clear winner. It was just kind of a fun way. And that monkey became a part of the zoo, the investment zoo. Now, this isn't something I'm recommending today. I'm not saying go either follow the monkeys or go get a listing of stocks and throwing darts. And I wouldn't spend a lot of time trying to find the old articles and find out what the monkey recommended and see how he did 30 years later. Don't spend a lot of effort on it. And given the choice, I'd rather pick the stocks that I or my investment advisors feel will outperform in the future, using some logic, using some kind of fundamental analysis that tells us these are good businesses, these are good stocks, they are likely to outperform for some logical reason, rather than relying on a dartboard and some random chance of picking stocks. Excuse me. Boy, last time we killed the show when I did that, but I apologize. Terrible cold I thought was gone completely is still on and off. So my apologies for my voice. Once in a while, that little hacking. Hopefully that didn't blow your ears out. Let me just take a sip of water. Apologize for that. Okay. Could you imagine if I were in Minnesota without heat? I'd probably have the flu or pneumonia or something like that. So much worse than a cough and a little bit of a cold. Now, more important than picking which stocks to buy, I want to decide when to buy and when to sell. That's often overlooked by the media and financial advisors. They like to focus on buying as if each of us just had money flowing in day after day, week after week, and we could keep buying. And I would argue it's just as important to know when to sell and what to sell as it is when to buy and what to buy. Other experts would argue that it's far more important to know when to sell than when to buy. Neither is easy, except, of course, after the fact. Hindsight is always perfect 20/20. Now, if we learn anything from the blindfolded monkey, the first animal in our investing zoo, then investing in index funds, and they can be index investment funds or they could index ETFs, might be just as successful as investing in managed funds, especially since the blindfolded monkey worked for fruits and nuts and bananas, and financial advisors charge a much, much higher fee, which of course lowers your net returns because the financial advisor's fees have to be subtracted out of the returns. But that advice of investing in index funds or index ETFs is hardly sufficient. There are hundreds of indices that we can invest in. Some track country indices. Some track large cap or small cap stocks. Some bonds or value and growth stocks. There are indices by sector, by asset class, and on and on and on. So knowing which index to buy and which to sell and when is hardly a simple decision. That's one of the many purposes of the Wealth DNA radio show. And I don't recall if Malkiel addressed that point of how to pick them if you don't use professionals or if you don't listen to shows like this one to know what's going on. You may recall about a month ago we had a guest who runs international investment funds, and we could get his perspective on those particular parts of the market, parts of the world that we very seldom travel to and may not know about much about. So anyway, that's what this show is about. Now, I'll recall, especially if some of the listeners just joined us, the question for today is which animals should you be watching to improve your returns? And I've already told you one animal and my recommendation. That animal is the monkey, and I don't recommend spending a lot of time watching what the monkey is doing. A reminder, I welcome you to give an answer to that question. Which animals should you be watching to improve your returns? And share your views or ask questions. Don't be bashful. We like participation. Either use the chat window below the radio screen on your internet screen if you're coming in via the internet, or if you're already coming in through the telephone, then you dialed in on 917-388-4162. Those that haven't dialed in, the number is 917-388-4162. And it is at the top of your internet screen. So you can always dial in, talk to our producer, who will put you on through and answer that question for us. Which animals should you be watching? But in the meantime, let me move ahead. Let's move on to the most popular animal in the financial markets, in this market, the zoo we call the financial markets. And that animal is the bull. Yeah, B-U-L-L. Like as in, oh, bull. Much like the bulls that run through the streets of Barcelona, they're ready and willing to charge ahead. The bulls in the financial markets want to keep buying. They're the optimists. They believe the market will go higher yesterday, today, tomorrow, and next week. And now that my internet is working, are finding the U.S. market is down just a touch today. So the bulls aren't as happy as usual. Or they're saying, what a great opportunity. It's down one-tenth of a percent. Maybe it's a great time to buy because the markets are going to keep going up all year long and for the next 5 years and whatever else. People in Asia and Europe are just as mixed as we are today. They're down or up just a little bit, so no clear direction in the markets on March 12th, 2012. But you listen to the show not to know what's happening necessarily today and what's going to happen tomorrow, although you'll probably get to know some stuff about that. We want to talk about things that affect your returns for the next 10, 20, and 30 years, whether you're listening to the show in 2012 or 2032. We don't care. You should get some good advice out of it. So anyway, back to the bulls. The bulls are ready to keep buying. Now, statistically speaking, the equity markets go up in the long term. So the bulls, overall, generally, are correct. And the markets also go up more days than they go down. So again, the bulls, on average, are right. So does that mean you just listen to them? No, I didn't say that. They are right more than 50% of the time. But when they're wrong, they are really wrong. Now, to years like 1929, 1987, 2000, and 2008 sound like good examples of when the bulls were really wrong. Now, recall, as I just started to mention, that we want the message on this show to be timeless. I don't care if you're listening in 20 years from now or 10 years from now from the archive or you're listening live. I want to bring some knowledge to you that you can use based on this show. And at the same time, the people that are listening live or listening in the near future on the archives, I want to bring some current events that can help you look back in 6 months or a year or 10 years to see if I was right. And I don't think there's going to be a question about being if I was right, because generally the advice is correct. So stay tuned to our show today as we talk about the investing zoo. Now, I should also add, while we're talking about bulls, that most investors, by definition, are optimists. If you weren't optimistic about the future, why would you put any money into the financial markets? You'd be burying it in the backyard. You'd be spending it. You would be living for today and not for tomorrow. You might invest it or put it into these guaranteed, quote-unquote, investments. I certainly am an optimist most of the time and share my current views for the next 3 to 6 months a little later in the show. But you heard already in January, we've been pretty optimistic on this show that this year will be a good one. Now, part of my view is actually based on what the animals in this investing zoo are doing, have been doing, and will likely continue to do. And that's what today's show is about. Let's go back to the bulls. The bulls have been running rampant in the financial markets since October of 2011. And actually, they have been in charge of the market for over 3 years. Just about now, four years ago, they started to buy stocks. Well, 3 years ago was correct. It was 2009. March of 2009 was pretty much the bottom. They've been buying stocks. Well, we had some dips and we had some ups and downs and whatever, but in October of 2011, most recently, the bulls took over again. And if you're listening to the archives later, look back and take a look at how October of 2011 through March of 2012 looked. Those listening live know that more or less the markets are up, up and up. There are a few down days and weeks early in that stretch just to make it interesting, but basically the markets are up about 25% since then. That's a lot in a short period of time. Now, just because the bulls are driving the stock prices up during this time, this 3 years now and entering our fourth, or in the last 6 months really, since this last bull drive, as we would call it, bull run, has been going, that doesn't mean they're buying more stock than others are selling. You have to keep that principle in mind. Now, there are a couple exceptions, like some additional stock offers that come out, or you have some stock buybacks and a few company bankruptcies and shares repurchased by companies and new shares issued. I mean, those are small little nuances, not big changes. But basically, whatever is bought had to be sold. So it's really a matter of the fact that the bulls are willing to pay more and more for the same shares day after day. And the people selling are less willing to give them away at lower prices. They will sell them at higher prices. So it's not a matter of more stock being sold. It's just a matter of prices going up. So bulls are willing to pay more to get more shares. Now, who's selling those shares to the bulls? Most often referred to them as the bears. That's the third animal I want to mention today in this investing zoo. They're the people that feel the prospects for the equity markets or whatever specific stock is worse in the future than today. So they're saying, okay, you're willing to pay me $73.50 for this stock or for this ETF. You can have it. Because I don't think it's going any further. Or it could be investors like myself that have taken some profit and said, you know what, I bought it at 50, it's now 73.5, you can have it. You can take the risk that it keeps going up. I'll take my profits and reinvest them elsewhere. But the ones that just feel like, hey, things are about to turn for the worst, I better bail out. It's getting worse. Look at all of the bad news. Those are the bears. The bears who feel the prospects are getting worse. They are the pessimists. So if the bulls are the optimists, the bears are the pessimists. Now, as I mentioned, other people like myself following the Ten Commandments in investing, when they buy low, they're perfectly willing to take some profits as prices rise. And you can't lose money taking profits. You hear that often on this show. We know that if I sell that stock or ETF at $73.50 or whatever my example is today, that sometime in the future the market will go down a little bit and I'll rebuy it a little cheaper. Now, the bears are an absolutely important animal in this zoo that we call the financial markets. As the pessimists, they see things that keep getting worse from now. If it wasn't for the bears, there wouldn't be enough sellers of stock for the bulls to buy from. Because if everybody were bullish, who would they buy from? Stocks would just keep climbing with nothing being sold. Now, by the way, the bears don't just keep selling and then stay out of the market. They want to profit as the markets fall. And there are several ways to do that. The best known, and we hear a lot about, is shorting a stock or an index. And that's selling shares they borrow with the intention and hope that they'll buy those shares back at a lower price. So I could sell you some stock or an ETF at $73.50 today and not even own it, because I really believe it's going to go down, and set myself a plan to rebuy it at 70 or 65 or 60. So I borrow some shares from somebody else, and that's short selling. Now, that's not our topic today, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. There are other ways, like you can buy put options, or you can sell call options. This last one, selling call options, can be very risky, especially if you don't own the underlying stock. Partially because, as I said, stocks do rise more often than they fall. So, overall, you have the risk of being wrong. But second and most importantly, you can lose far more than 100% of your investment. And your investment, when you sold that stock, let's say I sold 100 shares at $73.50. Okay, so I've got $7,350 that came to me because I sold this stock. And let's say I was wrong, and that stock was something like Google or Apple, and it goes up to $500. So I got $7,350, and to buy out of my position, I have to buy that stock for $50,000. Where do I get that money from? Well, from my savings, or lack thereof. This has caused more bankruptcies, I think, than anything else. So anyway, if you sold a call or you sold the stock short, you can get yourself into trouble. But the calls really do it fast. So you can lose money very, very fast. So I'm not recommending it. I'm just sharing that bears do want to make money. They just want to do it by selling now and buying later. Let's summarize these two important animals. We're going to bypass the monkeys, but I'm not recommending following them. But the bulls are the market optimists who believe the market is heading higher. They're buying today, and they were buying yesterday, and chances are they'll keep buying tomorrow. Bears, on the other hand, are pessimists about the market. And importantly, each of us can be bullish and bearish, or being bulls and bears at different times. Just recall that bulls are correct more often than the bears, since markets rise more often than they decline. What I'd like to do is dedicate the rest of this show to the fourth animal I associate with the market. It's not the monkeys, it's not the bulls, and it's not the bears. And this fourth animal is, I believe, the most important. It's the one to watch. It's the one that's the least successful of all of the animals in the zoo. It's the sheep. You see, the sheep graze and travel in herds and follow each other when one of them is led in some given direction. It might be the sheepdog that says, time to go home, and the sheepdog starts heading in that direction, and the sheep start following, and they all go together. So when the market is heading higher, more sheep step behind the herd, and they keep buying, and they follow what the others are doing, until eventually the last sheep buys and the market heads down. Then what? That's the point. Now, the same thing happens as the market is heading down. They follow the herd. Gee, the market is down now. I'd better start selling because my neighbor and my friends and everybody is telling me I should sell. So they bought at the top and they sell at or near the bottom. And most of you, the regular listeners, already know the first command of investing, buy low and sell high. And realize that this behavior that the sheep use violates that first commandment. Now, let me remind you of the quote for today, especially for those of you that joined us since the very beginning. Here's a quote from Robert Menschel. People are driven by peer pressure, envy, greed, and panic to find a shortcut. Who is Robert Menschel? And why do I mention him today? Obviously, the quote fits because the sheep, indeed, are driven by peer pressure, envy, greed, and then panic to find a shortcut to making money. Robert Menschel. He published a great book about sheep. Now, he doesn't use the term sheep, so when you read that book, and I do recommend it, the book is Markets, Mobs, and Mayhem by Robert Menschel, as I mentioned. He was at the time, and I don't think he still is, but he was a senior director of Goldman Sachs Group. He had a great investment track record during about 40 years of investing experience. He gives a lot of examples of crowd behavior. I call it sheep behavior. Some real life examples, and many from the equity and bond markets. You see, Mr. Menschel, well, he lived in that arena, if you will, of financial in the financial sector with Goldman Sachs, or Goldman Sachs, as some of our guests refer to them. But he contrasts leaders and followers. Forgetting about the markets for a second, let's go to the real world. He uses three examples of very powerful leaders who are not necessarily good people. Let me name a few. Hitler, Stalin, and how about fairly recently, Osama bin Laden? Can you imagine being one of the sheep who joined the herd following these demagogues? As he says, people in crowds lose their personalities, and at times they commit acts in utter contrast to their usual characters and habits. Can you imagine joining Hitler in his, what sounded like a good, strong leader, leading people in the wrong direction? And yet, people committed atrocious acts following this, quote-unquote, leader. Let me remind you that just tuned in, and those that have been on, you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. Today we're talking about how investing can be a zoo, and specifically answering which animals should you be watching to improve your returns. We've already talked about three of them. We've just started talking about the fourth and most important. We'd like to hear from a few listeners still on which animals should you be watching. During the radio show, there's a chat window below the radio player, or you can call in 917-388-4162. Now, back to the book by Robert Menschel. My favorite real-life example in his book is, and again, the book's title is Markets, Mobs, and Mayhem, is of the 1911, so we're going back now 100 years, 101, at the New York Triangles Shirt Waist Company. I don't know, the name almost doesn't mean anything 100 years later, does it? New York's Triangle Shirt Waist Company. You could look it up sometime, probably. I'm sure they still have history on the if you look on the internet. But there's a lady by the name of Rose Friedman. She survived that fire due to her decision to avoid following the crowd. Where was the crowd going? Well, down the stairs from the ninth floor. They were on the ninth floor of a building that was burning. The stairs were jammed with people. She said, "I'm not getting out this way. That's where all the crowd is going. It's kind of like everybody's selling their stocks. Maybe I won't sell right now." She decided to go the other way, to be a contrarian. She walked up to the top floor, onto the roof, which wasn't burning yet, and she jumped to the next building. Now, nearly 150 of her co-workers died that day. She survived and lived to the age of 107. I don't think leaping the building extended her lifespan, but it clearly kept her from being the 151st victim. I guess you could say she was bullish and heading up, as the sheep were bearish and heading down. Now, Mr. Menschel discusses lots of examples in the financial markets, because obviously that's what he was talking about. The earliest, of course, many of us are familiar with, is Tulip Mania. Do you know when that happened? That was 1634 to 1637. And you think the times are different now? Just listen to some of this stuff. During the 36 months of that Tulip Mania bubble, the price of tulips rose, are you ready for this, 5,900%. Now, can you imagine today, because in today's dollars, that final price of that tulip bulb was over $110,000. A tulip bulb that will sprout a tulip. $110,000? Who the hell is going to buy enough tulips to pay that much for the end product? But again, the prices were going up. The sheep were jumping in. And as every sheep herd climb goes, that one ended with a downhill trek of 93% in the next 10 months. 93% in 10 months, wiping out whatever people invested in tulip bulbs. Now, in percentage terms, that makes the Great Depression look tame. See, that stock bubble lasted a longer time, from 1923 to 1932. Yes, there was a crash in between and lots of ups and downs, but basically that stock bubble went through 1932. The sheep climb during the Great Depression was only 345%. And that was spread out over 71 months. It, of course, was followed by a decline of 87%. So when you compare that to Tulip Mania, it looks pretty tame. But look what happened to the world and how it changed the way those people think for the rest of their lives, their children's lives, and many of their grandchildren's lives. Now, we know from our history books that crash led to the Great Depression. Many businesses and lives were indeed destroyed. Now, you may recall my show on the First Commandment last year, and again, there are archives where you can listen to it, and I'll share that link with you. where I shared a story about a young investor in 1987. At the beginning of that show, you didn't know what year it was, but it was 1987, which, if you looked at the stocks in the Gulf region, were up 7,000%. Tulip mania all over again. And that happened from 1978 to 1986. 1987 was one hell of a crash. It was a short one, literally one day long. But if you want to listen to that show, to again hear another example of sheep behavior, just go back to the archive of past shows, and all of them are on there. It's www.wealthdna.us. For those of you that just tuned in, you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. And boy, we still have a lot to cover today. Just to show that sheep don't only live in the U.S. and Europe, where all of my examples so far have been, let's pick a more recent example from Asia. Taiwan stocks grew 1,168 to be exact, so nearly 1,200% in 1986 to 1990. So while the U.S. market was having its Black Monday crash, Taiwan was skyrocketing. What happened? Over the next 12 months, it was down 80%. And again, the percentages are just phenomenal, but picture putting in $100,000. Or $1 million, or $10,000, doesn't matter, and going up that much. You're euphoric. You're making all this money. You can't be wrong. You're a genius. And then it evaporates. Hopefully you start to see how important following the first commandment is, and avoiding sheep behavior, but sheep behavior violates the first commandment. And with all the commandments, whether it's the biblical ones or the ones for investors, each of them is simple, just not easy to follow. Now, let me get back from Robert Menschel's books, and let's relate this to 2012. So those listening live or to the archives in the next 2 months, 6 months, whatever, can benefit to know what the sheep are doing. There is a way, and the easiest way that I know to track the sheep, is to look at inflows and outflows from investment funds. Now, I need to remind our U.S. listeners that investment funds, I refer to them as the international term investment funds, in the U.S. tend to be referred to as mutual funds. And as somebody in Europe would say, well, why the hell would you call them that? What's mutual about them? And other than maybe the sheep moving in one mutual direction, there is none. I shared with you that the markets have been heading higher since October of 2011. That's about 5 months, right? How do you think the money was flowing into and out of investment funds during that five-month period? Now, if you think it was flowing into the equity markets, because obviously they're heading up, so they might be driving them up, and therefore moving out of bonds and out of cash, that would seem very logical. See, indeed, the market's going up, and it must be that money moving it, right? The data show the opposite. Since the large drop in stocks in August of 2011, individual investors have been selling equities and buying bonds and cash. So they've really underperformed during this period. They sold when the markets were dropping and then rising. So the markets dropped, they started selling. And then as the markets headed up, they're still moving money into the bond market. Take a look at the performance of those two markets. And I will share those numbers in just a second. But that's what I consider the best indicator of sheep, is the investment fund inflows and outflows. Now, I've been watching the markets long enough to know that sheep will indeed reverse that trend. As they review their financial statements here month after month that the equity markets are rising, they'll likely start buying more equities for the next 3 to 6 months now that they're higher. Given that, the markets are likely to continue up for another 3 to 6 months. There's my prediction based on what the sheep are doing. Until, of course, the last sheep has bought their fill of stocks. Then the trend starts heading down. Now, there are good reasons why this happens. Let me review a few just so you don't think these people are dumb. It's just they're less informed than you, our listeners. You see, the average sheep is not listening to this show. Or they are not listening to this show. I think sheep is plural, right? Or it's both. Anyway, they're not reading books or magazines on investing. They're probably working, or maybe some are retired. They're watching TV and reading the internet to get updates on what's happening in the world. And the worst is that they review their statements every 3 to 6 months, or maybe even once a year. That's a big mistake. So they're not really in tune to what's happening. They may not know the market's been up for 5 months now. Now, there are good reasons for this, as I said. So again, I'm not trying to belittle these people. I'm trying to share the facts so that they also can learn and you can keep avoiding that behavior. The first, and I'm going to list 4 reasons that this happens, okay? The first is the internet. The 500 TV stations now available, however many, I don't watch them. And the information flowing constantly toward us and those poor sheep. Those sheep are just trying to figure out which way the sheep in front are moving. Some information positive, some negative, and they just wait and see which way the other sheep are moving. And the other sheep are selling stocks and moving into bonds. Then they wait to see what the other sheep, when the other sheep change direction, and they start following them. In other words, they become bullish. They waited while the equity markets were up 25%. During the whole time, the equity markets are 5%, and bonds are up 1%. And what have they been doing? Piling money into bonds to get that 1% return. They've missed this big uptick. Okay, second reason is much of the money that is invested in investment funds is actually in retirement plans, like RIRA in the U.S. would be IRAs or 401ks. Other parts of the world, they're often called pension plans, and pension plans that are controlled by the person who owns them. These plans generally restrict us to quarterly changes in investment direction. You can't just call up and say, you know what, I know I bought that yesterday, I want to resell it, and I want to do something else today. You're restricted to making changes, otherwise they'd go crazy at the administrator's desk. Basically, once a quarter, you can make some changes. Now, because these are supposed to be retirement funds in long term, that sounds reasonable, but the results are pretty ugly. Okay, there's a third reason. The rest of the investment fund money, not coming through retirement plans, have frequent trading restrictions. Now, this is fairly new, and that's why I said this has actually gotten worse over time. Just like the internet, we're getting more and more information than we ever used to. But this has gotten worse because 10 years ago or so, or maybe a little longer, you could buy and sell on a daily basis any given investment fund. And now they restrict your sales. I use investment funds at Vanguard, not for a large portion of my portfolio, but there's some in there. And they restrict their sales. So if I sell today some of my investment fund, I can't sell that fund again, any amount, for the next 2 months. So investors hesitate to sell now. They may need to bail out in a month or two, so why not just keep waiting? And then the fourth reason. The investment funds, including the retirement plans, generally send out performance statements every quarter. So let's analyze what a typical sheep might have seen over the last few months and what they're likely to see. In October, when they got their statements from the first 3 quarters, they saw the equity markets had been up for 3 years, and then they were, you know, obviously happy that was the case and that they were invested, but that the equity markets have dropped a lot in 2011, because that was the case for the first 9 months. Now, this, obviously to a sheep, is a good indicator that people are selling. I better start selling, get out of equities and into bonds. So they did. And the data confirms it. In January, they got their statements that showed their equity funds were flat for 2011. And their bonds were up 5% or so. Well, that's good enforcement to keep doing what I'm doing. I should just keep pulling money out of the equity markets and put it into bonds, because bonds are outperforming for 2011. And that was true. Thus, they underperformed in the fourth quarter, because what did they do? They got out of the equity markets just as they were recovering. Now, unless something dramatically changes in the next few weeks, and there's no indication that it's going to, but again, something could change. Let me tell you what's going to happen. This is one of my rare predictions for the near future. Well, I won't say rare. I do share a lot of this advice with you. But what's going to happen is they're going to get their statements in April again. And it's going to show the opposite. Stocks are up dramatically. Wow. And bonds are flat. This is now time to follow the sheep. I've got to start jumping into equities and sell some of those bonds. I need to be in equities. They are heading up. So here's the hint. Watch what the sheep are doing. Track those inflows and outflows of investment funds. If you don't get them regularly, ask some investment advisors to keep you posted on them. I do, and I got to tell you, the news that they had continued to flow out of stocks and into bonds for the last 5 months, to me, was the most bullish indicator for the next 3 to 6. So now we're going to expect the sheep to re-enter equities, which are at higher prices. I get to sell them some stocks as I take profits. And knowing that the sheep are likely to switch and start selling bonds and take advantage of this rising stock market means we have more investors jumping in for the next 3 to 6 months, which gives the equity markets another boost. There will be lots of anxious buyers for equities after they've risen. Let's look at a little bit of Mr. Menchel's advice. I won't go through all of his list. I've got a lot of it here. But he has three principles, key principles that help you avoid the next bubble. Okay? And some of these are worth writing down, or just remember that the last 10, 15 minutes of the archive is on these principles. Or, of course, you can grab his book as well. I'm sure he would appreciate the customers. And it is a damn good book. I don't get me wrong. I don't want to try to give away the punchlines and all of the information and have you not read it. It is probably the best book written on sheep behavior. But here's his three principles. The faster a stock market climbs, the quicker it will fall. Does that sound like any of the examples he gave? Number two, the easier that information arrives, the less valuable it is. And information flows free of charge 24 hours a day on the internet and on television. The more certain, this is the third one, the more certain the crowd, or I would say sheep herd, is, the more certain you can be that it will be wrong. So as 80% of investment advisors and investors, or 90%, or any high percentage, are saying the market is going to keep going up, they will be wrong. In talking about crowds getting out of control, by the way, he gives a kind of almost a side note, which may help you in your own personal safety someday, but I will draw the analogy to investing. If you're in a crowd that's getting out of control, and does buying sneakers during Christmas time sound like a good example? And I do occasionally see news snippets of people literally bursting doors down to get in on Black Friday sales of somebody's newest sneakers at $200 a pair or some ungodly amounts. I don't think I pay that much for my best dress shoes that last for 20 years. But anyway, he shares this advice. If you're in one of those crowds, wrap your arms around your knees. Bring your knees up to your chest and circle them with your arms. In other words, roll yourself up in a ball tightly. And as the crowd stomp by, you'll be hurt the least. That doesn't mean you won't get rolled around and banged up a little bit and a little sore, but you will survive. Now, what's the investor equivalent? Get out of the way as the sheep pass. Calmly reassess. The sheep are now going to jump into the market, or at least historically they have. I believe they will, and start buying. So take a look at it. Watch the sheep herd drive it up. Relook at it and say, has it got carried away? And a good time to sell. Or maybe even sell them some stock on the way. So he, in essence, has three steps to this. Avoiding the crowd, or not getting trampled by the crowd. Make a counterintuitive effort to keep calm. Again, the big rush, down the stairs, out because of the fire, like Rose Friedman. Be counterintuitive. Stay calm. Relook at the situation. Number two, stay detached. Just like the safety experts say, the crowd is moving and pushing and shoving. You roll up your knees up to your chest, put your arms around them, and stay out of the way. Third, cultivate a strong inner compass. Resist outer influences. And I can assure you personally that listening to the show regularly will help. It will be that strong inner compass. I think we have enough time. Let me share, and I'll share these fairly quickly, so you may have to re-listen to this to jot them down or grab his book, as I mentioned. His 14 rules to avoid getting caught up in the bull, bear, or sheep stampede. I mean, they are stampedes on the way up and on the way down. The bulls drive it up, the sheep keep it going. The bears drive it down, and the sheep keep it going now. Remember, this is number one, remember that stock markets are always shifting between greed and fear, or between the bulls and the bears. Number two, history shows a declining market always comes back. This is one of the commandments we haven't talked about yet anyway. No matter how shocking the events that drove it down. And history just keeps repeating itself. The old this time is different hasn't proved true yet. Now, the opposite, of course, is true of markets that go up quickly. And did somebody mention real estate when I said that? Number three, define the sandbox you want to play in. In other words, find the investments you want to buy, and when they're reasonably priced, buy them. Okay, prices drop on the stocks you want, buy them then. Number four, have a good buy strategy. Stick with it. And I am very regimented on this in my portfolio. He suggests placing orders in advance to prevent those cold feet when the market turns ugly. You had a sell order. Leave it in place while the market is going up, because it might be the right decision. You have a buy order. If it's dropping like crazy, it buys, and you start getting cold feet and say, maybe I won't buy. It just may turn out to be the right decision, and the first commandment says it will. Okay, number five, stick with what you know. And we haven't covered this principle on the show yet. We will. Number six, stick with who you are. Now, this we discussed during the second commandment of investing, which is know thyself. Again, all in the archives. Number seven, stick with companies that know what they are, not companies that keep changing their strategic direction. Number eight, always perform due diligence. Now, this is the tough one for non-professionals that are just investing in the markets, if you will, casually for their own purposes. And over time, I'll share some Pareto 80-20 methods in future shows. Number nine, never make a buy or sell decision in your broker's office or on the trading room. You just heard all the good news or all the bad news. Ponder it. Think about it. Don't become a sheep at the heat of the moment. Number 10, buy for the long term. Number 11, that doesn't mean you're going to keep it forever, but buy it for the long term and then find out when, if appropriate, to exit. Number 11, realize that boring companies are often the best investments. I mentioned Google and Apple. Have those been boring investments? Are those boring technologies? We'll have to see how those perform over the next 10 years. Number 12, remember that the faster a stock runs up in value, the faster it's likely to run down. Number 13, aim for small, consistent gains. Do I hear take profits? Aim for small, consistent gains rather than swinging for the fences. Don't go for that 100% return on that and can't lose stock. Go for the 1 or 2 or 3% certainty. Number 14, never forget the miracle of compounding, which we've discussed a little bit on the show, but we're going to discuss many more times. I got a couple things. Let me try to summarize some of the real key points from today's show. A bull is optimistic, a bear is pessimistic. And keep in mind, each of us may be one of those two at any point in time. And hopefully you could sense I am at this point very bullish. That doesn't mean I'm only buying. The sheep are the most dangerous. They eventually follow the herd, right to the slaughterhouse. Let's talk about what some of the other key points are on this show on Investing Can Be a Zoo. We talked about four animals, the monkeys, the bulls, bears, and sheep. The market is moved daily, up by the bulls, buying, and down by the bears, selling. When the bulls are convinced they're right, they're going to keep bidding up the shares. They're just going to keep buying and buying more shares at higher prices, regardless of how high those prices go. Okay, so those are the bulls and the bears driving the market. The sheep, on the other hand, are on the sidelines for a while. They watch which way the crowds are going and then start following the crowd. They buy after stocks went up and sell when stocks went down because others are doing it. And along the way, they violate the first commandment of investing. And of course, they get lousy returns. And then they repeat the cycle. Now, I'd like to add two key points here that we don't have time to discuss today. Very related topics that we will touch on over time. But these are, if you will, related to the sheep's tendency to follow the market. And I have to forewarn you of both. And that's why I'll at least give you the headline and something to think about. And we will cover them in future shows. Number one is getting optimistic about the stock market when economic indicators start to look good, or getting pessimistic because economic indicators start to look bad. Well, what's wrong with that? We'll talk about it more in the future, but that is sheep behavior because the stock market doesn't follow economic indicators. It's usually way too late. Economic indicators start to look good. Means the stock market is already up for the last 6 months. Then secondly is what investment advisors and investment companies love to use for this customized portfolio for you, using 50 or 200-day moving averages to buy or sell. Now, both of those averages are, by the way, we're well above both of those averages in most markets. So what it would say is this is not the time to sell. So the financial advisors are not getting you out of the markets at all. You're being included in the sheep. And when will you start to sell? After everybody else has started to sell. It's been heading down for some time, and it crosses that 50-day or 200-day moving average. So those averages actually tell us that the markets will be bullish. I'm not saying they're good average, they're good indicators, but they do tell us what the sheep are doing. Because investment advisors are moving their clients' money still into the stock market because it's been heading up and it's above those averages. And again, we'll cover more of those in the future shows. Let me remind you, our next Wealth DNA radio show is the fourth Monday of March, and that's Monday, March 26th, 2012. Same place, same time. When I say that, I mean 8 o'clock Arizona time. If you're in Europe and you change your clocks, which you likely will by then, the show will be 1 hour later for you. We don't change. You do. Our guest will be Michael Fitzgerald. Now, he specializes on financial planning for baby boomers and retirees, a big investor group, if you will. Now, there's a lot of initials on his business card that follow his name. It's kind of like alphabet soup of business cards. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean it jokingly. We're going to ask him what all those initials mean and why they're important to his clients. It may be something you aren't aware of in terms of degrees and titles and certifications. Whether you're a baby boomer, a baby boomeranger, or Gen Xer or Gen Yer, I can assure you it will be a relevant topic to help you become truly wealthy. We'll be scheduling many more great guests like Michael Fitzgerald during 2012. Your suggestions are always welcome. We have a long list of people we're talking to and trying to get the right times. Now, the very next day, that's March 27th, we're having our next, it's going to be a short, a half hour, Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar. And it's going to be held for the first time ever on the radio. Not on this particular show, because that show would happen on Monday, and we'll have Michael Fitzgerald, right? But on Tuesday, March 27th at 4:30 p.m., this is Phoenix time, on KFNX Radio. So that's KFNX Radio in Phoenix, Arizona. That's 1100 on the AM dial. Now, for those of you outside of the Phoenix listening area, you can listen to KFNX Radio in Phoenix, Arizona. You can listen on TuneIn.com, spelled just that way, TuneIn.com. So TuneIn.com, you can listen to KFNX anywhere in the world. If you haven't received information about our seminars in the past, and we haven't done one for a little while, just time constraints, send an email to me, same with keeping posted on this show, ron@wealthdna.us. I'll send you the details for this and future seminars. Now, we maintain an archive of past shows, as I mentioned, on wealthdna.us. We also provide the links for future shows. At the bottom of that webpage, if you just scroll down, you can enter your name and email address. You'll be added to our announcements about the show. No commitment, but it is free of charge. Just, or the other alternative is, as I mentioned, send me an email, ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about those shows. So what would I say in closing? Visit the zoo, watch the sheep, and do the opposite. I look forward to seeing you here again, March 26th, same place and same time. For our German listeners, Auf Wiedersehen. In the meantime, happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.